Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 107. I'm recording it on Wednesday, March 11th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 12. That's a little bit below fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at the Incompetech.com website. This particular selection is entitled Monster Promenade. A good piece of music for a podcast discussing passive investing, I think. And the title of the podcast is, In a Global Economy, Boom and Bust Means Something Different from What It Has Always Meant Before. I got the idea for this podcast when I was doing my rounds of the internet this morning, and I saw an article that quoted an official from some other country, and he put forward a statistic. He said, trying to describe the depth of the economic crisis we're living through today. He said, the world, not the United States, the world has lost 45% of its wealth. 45% of global wealth has been lost in the last 18 months. Now, I presume that statistic was put out to shock people. It's a shocking number when you think of all the people all over the world and all the wealth they've tried to accumulate over the course of a lifetime, and roughly half of that wealth. I think the actual title of the article was Half of Global Wealth Gone, something like that. So half of all the accumulated savings of a lifetime of all the people on planet Earth has been wiped away in 18 months. And of course it is, in one sense, it's as shocking as all get out, holy moly, half of the world's wealth gone. But in another sense, should we be surprised? Let's just, I know the U.S., I'm not familiar with all these other countries, but in the U.S., at the top of the passive investing bubble, stocks were valued at 3 times fair value. So stocks are the wealth. It's not the entire wealth of the United States, but stocks are the wealth of corporate United States, all the companies on the stock exchange. So that particular part of wealth was being given a value 3 times fair value. We've lost, I think the number that I recently read was we've lost $11 trillion in the return to fair value in stock prices, and that's just stocks. And then we lost another $4 trillion in the return to fair value in housing, so that's $15 trillion. The housing bubble was fueled by the stock bubble. What, of course, happens is when you tell people that the value of their stock portfolios is 3 times what it really is, which is what passive investing urges us to do, when you value it at 3 times fair value, that money gets leveraged. People don't just let the money sit in an account. They say, say you had 500,000, you had a wealth of 500,000 in stocks. You say you were close to retirement. You had accumulated 500,000 worth of wealth. And the passive investing portfolio statements are saying, hey, you don't have 500,000 in wealth. You have 1.5 million. Hey, you're rich. You got 1.5 million. So what do you do with the extra million? You don't just let it sit there. You leverage it. You say, well, I got 1.5 million. I need about a million to retire. So I've got 500,000 to kill, maybe buy some housing, some extra housing, a couple extra houses, put 500,000 into housing and get some leverage. Maybe you can buy 2 million worth of housing that you can't afford. You don't have any of that money. It's not real. It's just, it's a game that we played with ourselves during the passive investing era. We all pretend it. Valuations don't matter. We all pretend it. There's no need to lower your stock allocation just because prices are insane. That would be wrong. You don't want to do that. No. The question that occurred to me reading this statistic about, we've lost 50%. It's really 45%. We've lost half of the global wealth. 45% was the number the fellow gave. There have been three reactions to the economic crisis. One is the reaction of pretend to do something about it. That's the passive investing reaction. We'll have to pass a stimulus bill. I'm not mocking the stimulus bill. I've talked about that in other podcasts, but I do think it's a sideshow. I think it's a little silly. There's a stimulus bill passed every year, or they call it something else. They call it budget reconciliation, or they call it tax reform. But there's always a bill where they give, huge amounts of spending to all the different districts. And that's just the government process that we have. Like it or lump it, this is just bigger. But I don't personally see how it has anything to do with, what I call the passive investing stock crash of 2008. To solve the passive investing stock crash, you've got to explain to people why passive investing doesn't work. You've got to tell them what does work. You've got to explain to people the realities of stock investing, that valuations do matter, that you do need to change your stock allocation when prices go insane. That seems to me, the responsible approach, the realistic approach. But one approach is, pretend nothing happened, say a few words, that you let people know, oh yes, it was bad. It was bad that we lost all this money, but we're just going to go on as before. We're going to keep passing stimulus bills and, I don't know, if you're a Democrat, you're going to pass a stimulus bill. If you're Republican, you're going to criticize the stimulus bill. Politics as usual on both sides. If you're an investing expert, you're going to say, hey, did you forget? Stocks for the long run, timing doesn't work. Buy and hold, all those things, all the marketing slogans, come on. Those are the marketing slogans, Buy and hold. Stay the course. Timing doesn't work. That's reaction one. Just, pretend it never happened. Maybe say a few words. And go on with your regular business as usual. Back to business as usual. Reaction two is a reaction that I find very sad, but I think it's becoming a more common one all the time. That's the reaction that Frugal Dad took. I've discussed Frugal Dad in some of my podcast, and he's saying, well, I've seen a lot of people get hurt, a lot of people get crushed, including myself, so I'm thinking of just, and Taylor Larimore, frankly, is going this route, get out of stocks, forget about stocks, stocks aren't worth it. That makes me sad, because for two reasons. One, it's going to take you many, many more years to retire if you give up on stocks. You're going to delay your retirement by many years. So you're giving up a lot of wealth over the course of a lifetime by taking that path. And two, we're never going to solve this problem unless we have some humans motivated to solve it. And the ones who should be motivated are the ones who got crushed. So if all those people get out of stocks, guess who's left? The passive investors. The people who advocate passive investing. They're poorer than ever before, but they're still, not going to say those magic words. I was wrong. So we keep going down the, we never fix it. We never fix. We don't fix the problem unless we have people involved who want to fix it. And if all the people who are not dogmatics leave the field, then the dogmatics remain in control, even after having caused the biggest loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States. So that's the second response. And the third response is, you know, the rational investing response. And, you know, I lead the charge on that to the extent I can with these podcasts. But there are a number of people who are looking at these ideas. You know, I've seen more articles pointing out that the efficient market theory has been discredited for close to three decades now. I've seen more articles pointing that out since the crash. When was the big part? The dramatic part of the crash was September. September, October, November, December, January, February. So say 6 months. I've seen more articles pointing out that the efficient market theory has been discredited in those 6 months than I had seen in 6 years before that. So we've seen people turning. We've seen people at least toying with the idea. You know, maybe we should tell people. The academic research has shown for 30 years passive investing can never work. Valuations affect long-term returns. Maybe we should tell people. Maybe we should let people know. Maybe we should tell people the realities of stock investing. But that's a minority view today. I hope it's not going to be a minority view for too much longer. I have my hopes. I have my prayers. I've been saying that for a long time, though. And I've been proven wrong, so I'm not going to make any dramatic. I don't make dramatic statements anymore. I don't make predictions of when that's going to happen. But I have hopes. I have hopes. My worst fear, I was talking to some friends the other day and I sort of let my worst fear slip out. I probably hinted at it in earlier podcasts that my worst fear is they were saying, oh, how low can it go? You know, and I said, there's no economic need for it to go any lower at all. Economically, we're back below fair value. There's no need to go any lower. If we could just get people's confidence in the market back, which I think comes from telling people the straight story. But if we don't get people's confidence back, if we keep telling the marketing slogans, how low can we go? Going by the numbers that have it applied on the three earlier times we tried this disastrous approach, Dow 4,000, that's the number you get. So we still got a long ways to go. But I said that, and then I felt these were my friends, and I said I better not leave it at that because I don't think. If we were to go to Dow 4,000, I think there's a good chance we won't just drop to Dow 4,000 within a year or so. I think. See, this is all controlled by emotion. I think what could happen is we drop, you know, I don't know, we're now about, what are we now? I think today we're up around, I think it's 6,900, I believe, on the Dow. You know, you could go... You could go down to Dow 6,000 and then start up again. And by the time we got back to 8,000, which was once considered a low number, people would get excited, and people who had left the market would get back in, and maybe we push it back to 10,000. Then we have another big crash. Then we go from 10,000 to 4,000, another, you know, a 60% drop, and that would be the crash. That would be the crash that would finally break the back of the passive investing dogmatist. That's a dark scenario. Not predicting that. I'm just saying, you know, when they say how low can it go, it's not really a question of how low can it go. The question they're really asking is how bad could it go? And bad is not going to Dow 4,000 and then starting up, because if that all happened in a year, in a couple, you know, 5 years from now, things could be looking good. If a year from now we were Dow 4,000 and then we started up, that's not good, but it's not so bad. But if 5 years from now we have a 60% crash down to Dow 4,000, or the equivalent, adjusted for inflation at that time, that's worse. Stretching it out is worse. So my view is I don't want to go to Dow 4,000. I want to stabilize where we are. But in order to stabilize, I think I am a strong believer in telling people the straight story. When people have their money tied up in something, I believe you have to be straight with them. I almost want to laugh when I say those words. Here I am, you know, some guy who posts on the internet, no investing expert, and I'm saying, Exalted opinion, I believe that we should tell people the truth about stock investing when they put their retirement money in it. Oh, duh. That's a controversial statement? Only in investing is that a controversial statement. Any other area of human endeavor, that would be universally accepted as so. But all the rules go by the wayside when you get into this highly, intensely emotional human endeavor of stock investing. All right. The point is we have three reactions to the stock crash. There's four reactions. There's a fourth reaction. The fourth reaction is, it's sort of part of that third. Maybe it's part of that third. The third was the people who are shooting straight. So it's a subset of the third. The third was people who are shooting straight and saying, look, you know, the primary cause, they don't say that it's the only cause, and it's not the only cause, but I think it's by far the primary cause. But they say, look, you know, I've seen some articles where they've even talked about the banking. A lot of people say, oh, the banking is the problem. But I've seen several articles now that have pointed out that all these banking rules, you know, all the things they use, they're all complicated. Nobody understands them. I don't even think the people who crafted them understand them. But all those banking rules, guess what they're based on? The efficient market theory. They're based on the same gibberish that caused passive investing. Same thing. You know, there's more curlicues. There's more complications added to it. But the root thing is the same. This rational man idea and myth and efficient market theory and all this sort of thing that we've talked about on other podcasts. So, you know, saying it was caused by the banking problem is saying it was caused by the efficient market theory, which is saying that it was caused by passive investing. It's all the same. It's just got different names. You can't run an economy if people don't have any idea how much money they have, and people cannot have any idea how much money they have unless you adjust stock values for valuations. That's it. You can record 107 podcasts all saying the same thing. You can't run an economy unless people know how much money they have. You just can't do it. And people can't know how much money they have unless you adjust for valuations. And you can't adjust for valuations unless you acknowledge that they matter. And you can't have an efficient market. You can't make an argument that the market's efficient if you acknowledge that valuations matter. Because if valuations matter, the stock market sure as shooting ain't efficient when it's valued at 3x fair value. So it all circles. But the point is, there's a group. You know, one of the three reactions is the rational response, which is to acknowledge that we messed up big time. But while I am advocating rational investing, I'm advocating, look, let's educate everybody so that we never, ever, 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 ever do this again. That's my take. But what a lot of people are saying is not quite that. They're saying, yes, it was caused by efficient market, but they have this defeatist attitude. They say, well, that's human nature. We've done it 4x now. Every time we try passive investing, they don't use those words. Every time they would say ignore valuations. To me, they're the equivalent. But every time we ignore valuations, there's a crash, huge crash, but hey, that's the way humans are. Not a thing we can do about it. Just give up. So the question that swirls in my head is, are they right? Is the defeatist attitude right? Because, you know, there is a lot of evidence to support that. You look at the historical record. You know, we had a huge crash in the early 1900s. But 1929, we're right back there again. Try it again. A huge crash in the 1930s. But mid-1960s, we're ready to try it again. Huge crash in the 1970s. But by the late 1990s, we're ready to try it again. And now we have a huge crash in 2008. And who's, you know, what these people are saying is 2020, 2030, we'll be lined up again. More stocks for the long run. More passive investing. More buy and hold. More timing doesn't work, right? Well, I question that. I think I'm just... you know, I don't think I'm naive, but I am optimistic, I think, by nature. And when I hear that kind of talk, there's something in me that rebels against it and says, no, no, it doesn't have to be that way. And, you know, the argument they're making is there's nothing new under the sun. People have been destroying themselves by believing that valuations didn't matter since the first stock market opened for business. And there's nothing you can say on your podcast that's going to change it, Rob. Give up. The goons say this. They say, oh, Rob, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and thinking the results are going to be different. Rob, you've been telling people for 7 years that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies get all the numbers wrong. Rob, that's not going to change. People don't want to hear the realities of stock investing, Rob. That's never going to change. I think it's going to change. And I'll tell you one reason quick why I think it's going to change. I'm probably going to do a separate podcast on this, but there's this five stages of grief, and I've seen them play out, three of them. The first is denial, and I don't want to go into detail here because it deserves a separate podcast, but I've seen denial of the realities. I've seen anger, the second stage. I've seen anger, and now I'm seeing negotiation. In a recent thread I was on, there were people hinting that they could go halfway. They'd like to work out a deal where they could acknowledge some of the realities, but not all of the realities. And I think some people are bordering on depression today. We're not really there, but, give it 6 months. And that all sounds dark as all get out, but what comes after depression? Acceptance. And what comes with acceptance is new life. That's when you accept that person is dead and never coming back, and you can love them all your life. You know, you're never going to forget them. You're never going to forget the good times. They changed your life. But you're not going to spend the rest of your time in mourning. You're not going to spend the rest of your life in mourning, and you're going to build a new life. And I believe that day is going to come. And that's the work I do, is to lay the groundwork for that day. The work I do is to set forward the strategies so that people can come to terms with what has happened, that they've lost their wealth, because we made a mistake collectively. We made a grand mistake, and that we can dig ourselves out and that we can rebuild. And when we rebuild and when we learn how to invest effectively, which is the rational model, we can actually make most of that money back. And not, you know, takes time, but it can be done. But I try not to be naive, so I do listen to these people when they say, oh, nothing you can do, it's doomed. And it gives me pause. Am I wasting my time? Is there no chance that we can ever discuss investing in civil and reasonable ways? Is it hopeless? Here's a reason why I think it's not hopeless. The title of this podcast. In a global economy, boom and bust means something different from what it has ever meant before. Boom and bust is the passive model. In a rational model, the markets are self-regulating. In a rational model, rational investing model, You tell people the realities of investing, the ABCs of investing. The most basic rule of stock investing is stocks have always offered a far, far, far better long-term value proposition when they are priced reasonably than they have when they are insanely overvalued. That's surprise, surprise. You know, what would you think? So whenever prices become insane, we should inform everyone that has any money in the stock market. We could have politicians, we could have the president giving a speech, we could have investing experts like Bogle and Bernstein and Burns writing columns, giving interviews. We could have public service announcements on television letting people know, please sell your stocks before our economy is imperiled. I think this can be done. So every time prices got out of control, we would deluge people with information about the realities until we persuaded enough people to sell that prices had returned to reasonable levels. And then There's no need anymore. Then everything's back to normal. And if it happens again, you just put out the fire again. As many times as it has to be done. That's rational. That's the way we would run the railroad if we wanted people to be able to plan for their retirements by investing in stocks. That's the way we would run the railroad if we didn't want our economy to head into a depression as a result of the crisis created when we allow prices to go to insanely dangerous levels. That's the rational thing to do. Simple common sense, nothing more. It didn't take an IQ of 140 to think that one up, believe me. All right. What stands in the way of that? 30 years of the promotion of passive investing. 90% of today's investing experts have advocated passive investing at some time, in some way. And human nature is we don't like to admit mistakes. So they don't want to admit mistakes. And if they don't admit mistakes, we obviously can't change. We have to just keep going with what we have. It's wrong. You know, it causes millions of busted retirements. It causes an economic crisis. We don't understand risk. We can't talk about risk. We can't talk intelligently about how to set our stock allocations. We can't talk intelligently about whether it's possible to pick stocks or whether we all need index. No, every subject that affects stock investing is off the table. We can talk nonsense. We can talk passive investing. But we can't talk the realities. The realities are off the table because all of the historical data shows that passive investing can't work. So we can't look at history to learn how to invest. It's out of the question. That's where we stand. And what the cynics are saying, the cynics who say, there's nothing that can ever change. Nothing can be done. We're doomed. We're just always going to have boom and bust. They're saying we can't change that. Well, first of all, have we not seen changes in the world before? You know, their argument is essentially the argument that there's nothing new under the sun. But there was a day when we did not have, you know, we had not put a man on the moon. Right? People said that can't be done. But it was done. When we developed the will to do it, it got done. The same humans who mess up so bad are capable of dreaming big dreams and fighting big fights and conquering huge obstacles. We put a man on the moon. The cynics were proven wrong. We overcame slavery. Did we not? There were people who said it couldn't happen. We've elected a black president. There were people who said it would never happen, but it happened. You know, I don't care if you support Obama or you don't support Obama's policies. It's a fact that there are people who said we would never elect a black president. It's a fact that we've elected one. And there are a lot of people, you know, who voted for Obama who are very proud of that. And there are a lot of people who did not vote for Obama who are very proud of that. They're proud as Americans. That's happened. We haven't elected a woman president yet, but we've gotten sort of close a couple times. Cynics. I'm not a cynic. It rubs my fur the wrong way. There are people who said we would never have heart transplants. My father had a heart transplant. He's about 65. He lived another 20 years. So my father died 3.5 years ago. If there hadn't been heart transplants, my guess is, well, he would have died, you know, 20 years sooner. So I would have lost a lot of years. If the whole world had been cynics. So, I don't go for it. I don't go for it. I don't go for this stuff. You know, maybe they're right. Maybe the cynics are right. Sin has been with us since the beginning of time. So we're still going to keep sinning. We're still going to keep messing up. Dumbness has been with us since the beginning of time. We're still going to mess up somehow in some area. But I don't think it has to be with passive investing. I don't think it has to be with this idiotic idea that we don't need to change our stock allocations when prices reach insanely dangerous levels. That one, if we develop the will to overcome it, I believe we can overcome it because we have tools available to us today to make the case so strong. And if I have 4 podcasts on the question of how we overcome it. There's, I don't recall the name, but if you go back and you look at the list of podcasts at the website, it's the Robcast section of the site. You look there, and there are 2 sets of 4 that I've done. And the first set of 4 was, I think it was 31 reasons why I lost faith in passive investing. And, that was a set of 4 podcasts. They reach about an hour long. And then a few weeks later, I did 4 on the 4 things we need. I don't know how many things, 31 things. We need to do to change, to get from passive to rational. And a very simple thing. I think the biggest thing we could do is when we send out people's portfolio statements, adjust the number for valuations so they know how much money they really have. I think that itself would make passive investing impossible. If in January of 2000, the guy who had $500,000 in stocks, the guy who was close to retirement, if he looked at his statement and instead of saying $1.5 million, it said $500,000, he wouldn't go out and buy the $1 million vacation property. He wouldn't blow all his money, and he wouldn't be in the state he's in today. So you wouldn't have the boom and bust. No, he wouldn't have felt $1 million richer at the earlier time, that's for sure. But he also wouldn't have felt $1 million poorer when it all disappeared into thin air. Giving people accurate numbers, giving people accurate information about their stock portfolios makes all the difference in the world. That one change would change it. Now, the real focus of this podcast is the global economy. And that's one of the reasons why this has to change. One of the things we should be thinking about is, why was this bull market so much worse? It's bull markets that cause bear markets. So the entire problem, our entire economic crisis today was caused by the bull market of the late 1990s. Why was this bull market, this crash is obviously worse than any. It's looks like, we may well be in the worst economic crisis in the history of the United States. Why? Why was this bull market so much worse? In the bull market that ended in 1929, we went to a P10 level of 33. That was the worst we've ever seen until now. That was a loss of 80% of the value of the stock market. This time we went to a P10 level of 44, far beyond 1929. Why? What caused us to go so nuts this time? Well, number one, passive investing. Huge bull markets are always caused by the popularity of the idea that valuations don't matter. That's an emotional, it's just a get-rich-quick impulse. That's all. That's all passive investing is. When you pare away all the nonsense. So, obviously, we've had that before. But this time, it had more power because this is the first time when that argument had quote-unquote scientific research behind it. You see, people want to believe in the phony bull market prices. They want to believe it with all their heart, mind, and soul. That guy who had $500,000 in his portfolio and he sees a statement for $1.5 million, he doesn't want you to tell him it's only worth $500,000. He wants to believe. Well, the past, we've always persuaded people to believe that. Whenever we've had, huge bull markets, that's how you get huge bull markets. You tell lies. That's what a bull market is, a big lie, a big giant lie. Supersized. Well, this time it was really supersized because this time it wasn't just a lie like all the other lies. It was a lie with peer-reviewed academic research backing it up. So it wasn't just any old lie. This was my big beef with the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, the retirement studies that have caused millions of busted retirements. People used to say, Rob, come on. This is investing. Everybody tells lies in investing. This is nothing different. These studies, this is nothing. I'd say, look, if the authors of any of these studies want to come on the board and say my personal opinion Is it a 4% safe withdrawal rate? Withdrawal rate is safe? Fine. Everybody's entitled to their personal opinion. They're not saying that. They're saying that the historical data says this. They're saying it's scientific. And the data doesn't say anything of the kind. I've looked at the data. The data says 2%. They should report the numbers accurately. Or not report them at all. So one of the reasons the bull market got so out of control is that this time passive investing had academic quote unquote research backing it up. That made the virus much stronger than it's ever been before. A second reason is the internet. We didn't have the internet in the early years of the bull market, but by the late 90s we did. And the internet gave us a global communications medium, a way to spread information. Now, if the information had been good information, obviously that would have been a wonderful thing. But in a bull market, good information is taboo. The whole point of a bull market is nobody's supposed to tell the truth, because you tell the truth, you kill the bull market. This is why we have a ban on honest posting at all the retire early and indexing discussion board communities. Can't tell the truth. You'll destroy passive investing if you tell the truth. Passive investing is emotional. Truth is rational. There's a conflict. So the internet was used to spread information, bad information. People who wanted, say you were getting shaky about passive investing. You're saying, I don't know. My common sense tells me when stocks are valued at 3x fair value, I'm not sure I want to put all my retirement money in there. You start to get a little shaky. Well, you go to the internet and you go to your discussion board and all your friends say, hey, don't get those feelings. It's fine. And then they come up with some story. Oh, it's all different this time. Technology change. Look at this chart. Here's a chart. Stocks for the long run. Did you read that book, Stocks for the Long Run? Stocks for the Long Run, they take all the numbers and they ignore the valuation. So, you know, they don't give like accurate information. That would scare you, and that would cause you to do what your common sense says. But they don't do that. They leave out valuations. Oh, you read Stocks for the Long Run and your common sense won't bother you anymore. It'll help. It helped me. You see? Oh, the experts. Here's a link to some experts. The experts, they all say, don't worry, common sense, no, doesn't matter. No. It's different this time. The internet caused it to be worse than it ever was before. The fear of the middle class falling behind caused it to be worse than ever before. I've spoken to lots of people who had common sense and they thought of cutting back. But they were afraid. And the experts were telling them, look, if you don't have all your money in stocks, you're going to fall behind, because that's the really risky thing. Investing in a high-risk asset class, oh, the data says that, you know, stocks are going to give a negative return for 10 years. But you need, you know, and tips are paying 4% real, but it would be very, very dangerous to go with the asset class providing 4% real. You need to have all your money in the one providing a negative return, because you'll fall behind. You'll fall behind unless you're in the one providing the negative return. I'm an expert. I know. I understand. Common sense makes you be a scaredy cat, but you don't have to be a scaredy cat. You just do what I tell you. Don't you worry. Don't you let your common sense interfere now. No. No, you go to a discussion board and we'll find some people who will tell you, and we've got some studies. You'll feel better. Take two studies. Call me in the morning. You'll feel better. I promise. Put it all in stocks. Buy and hold. Timing doesn't work. No. Stocks for the long run. Did you know? Stocks for the long run. That's right. Stocks for the long run. The middle class was afraid of losing its place. So we were a little bit desperate. We fell for some stories we otherwise wouldn't have fallen for. And fourth, the global economy. This was a big factor. Say that we didn't have a global economy. There were a lot of people. If you went looking for information on the realities of stock investing, you could find it. That was always true. I know, because I did it. I used to be a passive investor. I discovered that the old school studies were wrong. I got out of stocks, but I didn't really study it until I posted on my discussion board. And then when the goons invaded and destroyed my board, I felt in order to protect my fellow community members, I had to do a little bit of research. And when I started looking, guess what? I found what I was looking for. It's all over the place. There's hundreds and hundreds of links to good articles, good research, all in conflict with passive investing. It's been around since 1981. Lots and lots and lots of it. So it is out there. Now, say that I read this research and I said, well, okay, U.S. market valued 3x fair value, not good. Long-term return, I look at the stock return predictor calculator at passionsaving.com. I look at that and I say, well, most likely long-term return's a negative number. I don't think a negative number, that's not going to help me with my retirement planning, I don't think. I don't have an IQ of 140. I'm not the smartest bear in the bunch, but a negative return 10 years, I don't know. It's just something seems a little funny about that idea. Let me check some other markets. You know, let me check the European markets, or let me, you know, check whatever. Now, we don't have a totally global economy. So it was always possible to go to markets that were somewhat less overvalued. I remember reading an article about Robert Shiller, you know, the author of Irrational Exuberance, that for at least for a time he had some money in the Brazil market. I saw a recent interview indicating he does not. He has no money in stocks today. But, you know, I presume that Shiller checked it out and he found that Brazil's market was not overvalued and he shifted his money there. Makes sense? So you can still do that sort of thing, but not as much, because the reality is we have been moving to a global economy for decades now. We've been moving in that direction. The pace of the change has been accelerating. So in the late 1990s, it was already true that to some extent, when the U.S. market became overvalued, other markets also became overvalued. Not all of them, but to a greater extent than in the past. So what's happening, as the economy becomes globalized, we are losing that escape valve. In other words, these people who say, it'll never change. 4x in U.S. history, people have come to believe in passive investing. They've come to believe that valuations don't matter. And every one of those 4x, they've all suffered bone-crushing losses, and there's not a thing we can do about it. It's just going to happen. I say no, because the world doesn't stay the same. The other factors aren't remaining the same. Used to be, you know, look at what happened in the Depression. It was bad. It was bad, 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 bad. My parents have told me stories. We had a P10 level of 33, and we had an 80% real loss in the stock market. Well, that's bad. But compare that to where we are now. This in the 90s, we went to a P10 level of 44. So if you're going to go by that example, I think this exaggerates how bad it is. But if you were to do that, you would say it should be more than 80% drop this time, maybe 90%. Okay. 90% loss. I don't think this is going to happen. But I'm giving you the worst case scenario. 90% loss from the top. Okay. What were we at the top? The highest we went, I guess the number back in 2000. I think the Dow was at about 12,000 was the high, 11,800 maybe. If it was 12,000 and you take out 90%, you're 1,200. I remember Bill Bernstein, in his book, The Four Pillars of Investing. He looked at a calculation that showed if stocks went to values they had been at in earlier times in history, we would go to a Dow 1600. So that's the same neighborhood. So these are very bleak scenarios. Now, say that happens, and it wouldn't be Dow 1600 today, because we've had inflation since then, and we've had years of economic growth since that book was published. So you'd have to translate it into some other number. You know, let's say it's Dow 4000, because I don't think that number's out of the question. That would be a P10 level of 7 or 8, which is what we've always gone to on the three earlier times when we did this to ourselves. So say Dow 4000. That's real, real, real bad. It's real, real, real bad. It's not quite a 50% drop from today, but it's maybe a 40% drop. It's a significant drop from today. We're now around 7,000. So we go down to 4,000. It's real, real, real bad. And the last time it happened, we had a Great Depression. And, you know, there was a Great Depression caused the World War, not here, but it caused the World War in Germany, which we became involved in. I mean, all kinds of bad things happened. But at least it wasn't the whole world economy that went down, you know, that had a crash of 90%. The global depression did spread. So that sort of argues against what I'm saying, but it may be that even then, I mean, it wasn't a global economy then, but even then, when you take a major player like the U.S. and you go to those valuation levels, maybe the world just can't deal with it. It just, you know, it's just too much. Because obviously, even then, there were ties between the countries that, you know, if we're going to lose 90% of our wealth in the United States, we can't buy things anymore, and so the other countries are affected. In other words, there's never been a time when there wasn't some interreaction, interconnection between different nations. So when one economy, and it's a major economy, destroys itself, elects to go passive and destroy itself, adopting passive investing and making it popular is the equivalent of swallowing a suicide pill. I don't think that's an overstatement. It's a suicide pill. Look at the historical record. Look at the four times that we've ignored valuations. Look at what happened. It's a suicide pill. Sometimes it doesn't kill you. You know, it's sort of like taking sleeping pills, an overdose, and, you know, sometimes you make it. Sometimes, you know, you didn't take enough, or, you know, somebody finds you in time and the doctors pump your stomach and you live, but it's not a smart it's not a smart way to, you know, solve your troubles. But my point is, as the economy becomes more globalized, that's more of a problem. Say that we combine all the stock markets. There is no alternative to the U.S. stock market. And then say, you know, this happens over the next 20 years. And then, you know, we have the rebirth of passive investing. We have a new book, Stocks for the Long Run 2. And we have, you know, John Bogle's son, you know, promoting index funds and you know, all this kind of thing. Then what? If there's no... Then you've got the global economy crashing. So, you know, this fellow saying the global economy has lost 45% of its wealth. Well, he didn't give the numbers for the U.S. But I presume it's worse. Maybe not. I don't know. I mean, you know, you can't really go by the stock numbers. I don't see how you can go by the stock numbers, because the stock market is not all of our wealth. But the loss that we've suffered from passive investing, I don't think is only the stock market. The housing market, the bubble there was financed by the bubble in the stocks. People thought they had more money than they did, so people bought more house than they could. And then when you return prices to fair value, you know, it's like sticking a knife in them. So what I'm trying to say is, when people say, we're just going to keep doing this over and over again, it's going to be business as usual, we're just going to have to tough it out, you know, might take 10 years, you might lose your business, you might lose your house, might lose your job, lose your retirement account, but hey, you know, it's the way the cookie crumbles, it's what happens, just tough it out. I don't think we can keep playing that game. You can't play that game in a world in which middle class people are using their stock, they're using their investments in stocks to finance their retirements. It's not a game. It's real, people. It's real. Let's talk serious. If it's a serious thing, you've got to give people accurate numbers to plan their retirements. Come on. And if it's a global economy, then you're not just blowing up one country, you're blowing up the whole globe. And it's stupid. It was always stupid. But now it's global stupid. It's not just national stupidity, it's global stupidity. I don't think this can stand. I don't think it can stand. I think we have done ourselves so much pain this time. We have caused ourselves so much pain that we're just going to have to stop. We're just going to have to acknowledge. We're just going to have to say, I was wrong. We're going to have to do it. We don't want to do it. We don't want to do it in the worst way. In the worst way. Nobody knows that better than me. I've seen it up front, up close and personal. But we're going to have to do it. You don't want to do it? Too bad. We're going to have to do it. We're all going to have to do it. And we're going to have to tell our friends to do it. And we're going to have to tell our neighbors to do it. And we're going to have to tell our coworkers to do it. And we're going to have to tell our fellow community members to do it. And we're going to have to tell our elected representatives to do it. And we're going to have to tell our investing experts to do it. We're all going to have to stand up in front of the room and say, I was wrong, and then tell our stories. And then guess what? After we tell our stories, we feel better about ourselves. Because that's what breaks the fever. That's what gets out the poison. Then it gets better. Then we can turn our attention from the ugliness and the friction and the humiliation and the shame and the guilt. And we could turn it to, hey, now that we've got that behind us, now that we're not playing stupid games anymore, how about we build a system that actually works? How about we talk about investing the way we talk about every other subject, where we're trying to succeed, not trying to fail? That's what you're doing. When you deny valuations, when you deny the effect of valuations, the single most important factor, what you're doing is you're trying to fail. That's passive investing. That's why I don't like it. It's trying to fail. Telling yourself fantasies about how much money you have in your account makes it impossible to plan effectively. That's the story. Now, there are people, there aren't a lot of people really, addressing this head on. As I say, I've seen a lot of articles where people talk about, I've seen a lot of articles saying efficient market theory doesn't work. Not too many have the nerve to say passive investing doesn't work, but that's, passive investing is the efficient market theory. It's just, the efficient market theory is the academic theory, and passive investing is the practical implementation of it. So they're saying the same thing, but, we all have this self-censorship we engage in. I've been guilty of it. I'm not guilty of it today, I hope. I don't think. One thing I'll say, I'll just say this as an aside. I talked on the last podcast about this thread. Oh, it was like the end of last week, beginning of this week. It was, I don't know when I put it up. Maybe last Wednesday. And then it was at this forum. I think it was Money Bloggers Network, something like that. And it's a forum for people who write personal finance blogs. And I put up a post and I said, I'd like to write some guest blog entries at some blogs. And if anybody's interested, let me know. And I said, I'm trying to start a national debate on, what caused the economic crisis, the flaws in passive investing. And I'd like to get some publicity. And if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer any questions. I've studied this, 24/7 now for 7 years. And I got, pretty good response. 8 people asked me to write blog entries, and lots of good questions. Lots of good questions. And very, very little abusive stuff. There was no abusive stuff until Saturday night. And then, somebody from Goon Central came over, and then the owner of the thing, some guy at JCL. I mean, he's a good guy. His blog is good. But I don't think this was a good decision. He just deleted the whole thread, and I asked him why, and he said, oh, there was an abusive post. I said, well, why didn't you delete the abusive post instead of the entire thread that the bloggers need to be able to look at to learn what they need to know to help their readers get through this crisis. And he said, well, it would have taken too much trouble to delete the one post. I felt it was easier to delete the whole thread. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. But, you know, I was, the thread, though, the responses I wrote in the thread, it was sort of exciting because the question is always, I'm forgetting now what got me on this riff, but I think what I was saying is, I was saying that people are mentioning that the efficient market theory is discredited for many years now, and that we haven't told people, and that's the source of the problem. But I said, not too many will say, the next step on the logic chain is to say, well, if the efficient market theory is flawed, you know, maybe we should have told people. Maybe we should have let people know that passive investing can't work in the real world. That would have been nice. There aren't too many who have gone quite that far. It's one step along on the logic chain. So we're getting close, but we're not quite there. But I was saying, you know, the thought that entered my head is, oh, am I saying I'm better? Have I never done that? No, I've played that game. I played it big time prior to May 13th, 2002. I knew that the safe withdrawal rate studies were analytically invalid going back to, the late 1990s when I was putting my retire early plan together. So I knew that. I don't know what precisely the year was, but that was a ways back, and I never mentioned it because I was scared. I knew. I had no idea what was going to happen. I had no idea. You know, the campaign of terror is just so far over the top that you can't even, such a thought never entered my wildest nightmare. But, I knew there was going to be abusive posting, you know, that I knew. And so I held back. But even after that, you know, even after I started posting honestly on investing, that was May 2002, there are different layers, you know. I would try different things. I think May 13th, 2002 was when I pointed out. But see, then, if you go back, you'll laugh. Because if you go back, that post of May 13, 2002, I didn't say the studies were analytically invalid. I asked this question. It was like Jeopardy, you know. I didn't say they're analytically invalid. I said, are they? You know, I said, should we count valuations? You know, all I did was ask a question. That's what caused the ban on honest posting. All you have to do is, in those days, all you had to do was ask a question. I don't think that's true today. But in those days, that's all you had to do to set them off. But then like a year later, it was a year later before I started saying the studies were analytically invalid. In other words, it took me about 12 months to work up the courage. And, you know, it was all safe withdrawal rates then. And then a couple years later, I we had confirmed that the old school studies were wrong, you know, 50 times over. And I got to the point where I said, wait a minute, if we know the old school studies are analytically invalid, why can't we predict stock returns, you know, at least within a range of possibilities? Why can't we do that? And then we did that. We created the stock return predictor. And then, of course, that led to other things. And then, you know, then I said, wait a minute. When I started posting at Vanguard Die Arts, I said, wait a minute. I love indexing. These people are saying I'm not a Boglehead, but I love Bogle's ideas. What's the difference between me and Bogle? What's the real difference? Because I love the guy. I think he's brilliant. I think he's a genius. I think he revolutionized investing. And I said, well, the difference is he likes he likes passive indexing. I like valuation-informed indexing. So what I've really got here is a new investing strategy, right? That's where the words valuation-informed indexing came into my head. It was when I started posting at Vanguard Diehards. I think it might have been I started posting there, I think, in July of 2005. It might have been like December of 2005 when I first used that term. You could check the website and find out. I think it might have been December of 2005. Then, you know, I don't think rational investing, I don't think I started using that phrase until maybe January of 2008. That came when I was writing some chapters of the book on investing, and you know, I sort of got into this thing where the failings of I kept, at the time, I wasn't saying passive investing was wrong. I was saying efficient market theory was wrong. which is a more direct way of saying it. It's really the efficient market theory that's wrong, and passive investing is the practical implementation. And of course, if the practical implementation is based on a bad theory, the practical implementation isn't going to work. But in the beginning, when I started writing this chapter, I kept saying efficient market theory is wrong, and it was bothering me. I said, wait, this is too clunky. You know, people don't want to read about efficient market theory. It sounds like you're back in school. So I said, I need to say this differently. And I said, well, what I'm really saying is passive investing is wrong. And again, I had never done it before, so I was a little scared. But then I wrote it, and then it sort of, you know, and I wrote an article at the site. After I wrote it in the book, I wrote an article at the site saying the same thing. And after I, you know, people challenged me, people yelled at me. But the yell, you know, I tried to defend myself, and the yelling didn't amount to much. You know, they didn't have any arguments. So after a while, I said, hey, I'm right. I guess I'm right. If they can't come up with any arguments, I'm probably right. So my confidence increased. This is what's happened on every single point. I stick my neck out, and I'm scared, and then I see what the reaction is. And I go to the goons. I don't avoid them. I go right into the lion's den and say, hey, anybody see any flaws with this? Help me out. And they try, and they can't come up with anything, and I say, okay. Until I hear something, I'm going to presume I'm right. Until I hear something else. I contact the experts. I've contacted Bogle, contacted Bernstein, contacted Jonathan Clements. I've contacted Scott Burns. I've contacted Bill Bangin. I've contacted Michael Kitsis. I do everything I can. Larry Swedrow, I contacted. Everybody I can to find out if anybody can find any flaws. And you know, as of 7 years, nobody has. And if anybody does, they'll be my best friend in the world, because I don't want to say this stuff if it's not true. If somebody finds any flaws, you know, they're going to get the next blog entry at my blog. Because, you know, I'm sure that I have gotten some things wrong. You can't put forward tens of thousands of posts as I have and not get something wrong. So I'd be grateful if they told me that. But my point here was, people aren't really saying, you know, I say I'm seeing a lot of articles on the efficient market theory where people are sort of tentatively suggesting, you know, maybe we should acknowledge, you know, it's only been 28 years that this research has been out showing the valuations affect long-term returns. Maybe we should let some people know. Maybe now that they've lost all their retirement money, be a good time, you know. Yeah, might have been better to have done that a couple years ago, but better late than never. So, but, you know, as I say, I saw an article, there were several articles today, sort of people souring on the Obama administration. Well, how long has he been in there? 6 weeks? You know, but they're saying, oh, you know, needs to devote more focus, you know, on the stock market or, you know, whatever it is. And you know, I'm not jumping up and down about the stimulus package. I did a podcast saying I think it's a sideshow. I don't think it solves the problem. But I see blame on both sides. That's where I'm coming down. I just don't feel that people are taking this serious. And there was an article saying that today. I forget who wrote it. Thomas Friedman wrote one of the articles I saw today, but I forgot who wrote the other one. But and what some guy, Howard Feynman, wrote one about Obama, people losing confidence. And Friedman wrote an article where people aren't taking it seriously enough. And there was a third one on that same general theme. And I think that's true. I think what's going on is that, oh, it was a guy at Real Clear Markets. And it was a guy I quoted once before, but I don't know his name. I linked to him before, but it was one sentence. It wasn't the whole article, but it was a very good sentence where he was basically saying, you know, people are going to recreate a housing bubble. It says, we're just waiting. We're not really taking it serious. People they're saying that they think it was bad, but we have not accepted that we caused this pain on ourselves. And so we're just going to go back to doing the same thing. We haven't yet learned our lesson. And I think that's right. I think a lot of people want to learn it. We've seen from the first days of the great debate that, you know, we haven't had millions participate, but we've had thousands who have expressed the desire to learn the realities. And if there's thousands in our little discussion board communities, there's clearly millions out of the general population. It may not be a majority, but there's a large number who would like to learn the realities of stock investing. I'm sure of that. You know, they just can't. They can't, because the group that doesn't want them to know the realities is you know, 50 times more intense about blocking it than the group that wants to learn them is about learning. But the point here is, a lot of us are sort of playing games. You know, we're using big words like, oh, depression, and, you know, we need action, we need change. But we don't want to look at change that's real. We don't want to look at serious change. Serious change would be doing away with passive investing and moving to a rational model. I don't know that it's ever been done before. It'd be an interesting research project. Has there ever been a society in which people made information available to stock investors that they need to invest effectively for the long term? I am not aware of a case where that's been done. Obviously, there are books you can get. Robert Shiller, Cliff S. Ness, Rob Arnott, Ed Easterling, John Malden, John Walter Russell, Jeremy Grantham. You know, the books are out there. But, you know, it's not... Has there ever been a society where that sort of thing was promoted so that the average person knew about it? You didn't have to go searching for it. You know, it wasn't 10% of the experts saying the realities, it was 90%, and 10% were pushing passive investing. Has that ever happened? I'm not aware of that ever happening. I'm sure it's never happened in the United States, or I would know about it. But I imagine there's more accurate stuff when prices are reasonable. I'm sure of that. So there've been, you know, it rises and falls. Somebody had a post on that Vanguard Diehards today saying all the rules of thumb change. You know, they say, oh, you should have, you know, your age in bonds. But then when it's a bull market, they say your age plus, your age minus 25. You know, the rules of thumb all change. When prices are insanely dangerous, they pump up the stock allocation recommendation. And when stocks offer a very good deal, they do the opposite. They say, no. You know, lower your stock, keep it low. 10% stock allocation is plenty. You know, stocks offer a tremendous value proposition, 10%, keep it to 10. But when stocks are a negative long-term return, 90%, that sounds reasonable. You know, all the numbers are doctored, but I don't know of any society that has ever really told the full story with full explanations and calculators and podcasts and all this sort of thing. I'm not aware of that. There are other, you know, that's what I'm trying to do at my website. And there are other websites that have good information, but a lot of the ones that have good information are not aimed at the average person. They're aimed at sophisticated, you know, investors, people trying to, you know, time the market, people trying to time it in a short-term sense, you know, short the market or things like that. And I'm not into that. I'm just speaking to the average person. So I am not aware of anybody who does that. You know, if you are, let me know. I'd love to meet that person and make friends with them. I don't know who anybody doing that. But if we're going to get serious about this economic crisis, I think that's what we've got to do. We've got to walk into the lion's den, which is the the passive investing model. And we've got to, you know, just take the bull by the horns and deal with the realities. And you know what? I'll wrap up with this because I think it ties it back to the global economy issue. But I did see there was another, I think it was an interview with the Treasury Secretary, and he was saying capitalism is changing. And you've seen this theme a lot. People saying, oh, capitalism. And some are happy about it and some are not happy about it. But I'm pro-capitalist. I guess I'm not totally happy about it, but I think it has to change. I definitely accept that it has to change. And what I would compare, you know, because it is capitalism that permits passive investing. That's how I feel about it. You know, I'm pro-capitalist, pro-free market, let's call it. I'm pro-free market. But what kind of free market is it when nobody has accurate information? There's millions of people that have their retirement money in stocks. And stocks have been insanely dangerous from 1995 through the first part of 2008. And how many experts told us? That's a free market? You put all your life savings in an asset class? In January of 2000, the stock return predictor told us that the most likely long-term return on stocks was a negative number. How many people knew that? I'd like to take a poll. If 10% of the population knew that, I'd be surprised. I've talked to neighbors about it. you know, my next door neighbor. I sat out there on this porch, you know, 3 years ago maybe, and I told him we're going to Dow 6000, and he said, Rob, if we go to Dow 6000, people are going to be jumping out of windows. You know, and I saw him yesterday, and we were talking, and I said, hey, remember when I told you, you know, yesterday we were at Dow 6500. I said, remember when I said Dow 6000? And he remembered. He didn't, you know, I don't think he was super happy about it, but, you know, it's one of the unfortunate things, you know. Because so many people were telling him the wrong story, he's not happy that somebody told him the right story. But, you know, that's the job. I mean, I didn't do it to hurt his feelings, obviously, and I don't do it to hurt anybody's feelings. But I do believe, I'm a reporter, and I believe people need accurate information. Reporters tend to think that, you know. So it's not a free market. It's a travesty. It's a travesty. It's a free market in name only. Unless you supply accurate information, nobody's free. We're all slaves to our emotions. Unless there are some people willing to stand up and tell us the truth when we most need to hear it. And we're not getting that. And so I believe free markets can work. But I believe there needs to be, you know, they need a little push sometimes. And the push is when there's no financial incentive in telling people the truth, when there's millions of dollars to be made in telling people fairy tales, and no financial incentive for telling the truth, it may be that government has to step in, and it may be that it can be done outside of government, you know. Like I say, we could set up websites that would give people accurate information, you know, sort of these, like these urban myth websites that tell people, you know, so they can check out the urban myths and find out if they're true or not. What's it called? I forget the name of it. But, you know, you can go to that four set, that four podcast set, and I have the ideas there for how to make the shift. But without that, we don't have a free market. And that's a big change. It's a dramatic change. It changes everything. Accurate information on stock investing changes our economy. It's a big, I think it's a wonderful change. I think it's all for the good, but it's certainly a big change. Certainly a big change. When you're telling a guy that he's got $500,000 in his account and not $1.5 million, you're changing lots of things. You're going to have more income equality. You're not going to have as much income inequality. You're not going to have as much BS on stocks. You know, the experts are going to be telling a different story. People are going to be planning their retirements differently. People are going to be investing in other asset classes at certain times. You change everything about our economy when you do that. It's a big, big change. It's very fundamental. Goes right to the root. So I think what has happened, if you take an historical overview, is back in, 1989? When the communist countries fell, I don't remember the year. A big event, but I remember it happening, but I don't remember the year. But somewhere around then, and so a lot of people declared, you know, socialism has failed. And I know there was a book, you know, The End of History. And the guy said, you know, it's free market capitalism that has survived. Well, I think a case could be made that what this economic crisis is teaching us, maybe it hasn't sunk in yet. But unregulated capitalism has failed too. I thought that we had learned that it had failed back in the Depression. Thought we had learned that, and that was what the New Deal was all about. But it seems to me we've had to relearn the lesson. Basically, unregulated capitalism snuck back in the back door. We have this heartless capitalism in the stock market. And that's the capitalism that matters most to the average person, because the average person has all his wealth tied up in the stock market today. Not all, that wasn't true in the 20s, but it's true today. So when that system becomes as corrupt as it has become during the passive investing era, capitalism fails. It can't work. So we're sort of back to, you know, we're back to square one. Socialism has failed. Capitalism has failed. Where do we go? I think we've got to create a system that works in the modern day. And the modern day is a global economy. You know, like it or not, that's the reality. I don't think. My view is, you know, it's bad. Nobody wants to go through this stuff. But it can be turned into something good. Even wars, you know, when you look back historically, you can find good things that came out of them. Because it takes really bad, scary stuff to shake people up enough to make change, real change. And I think that's what's on the table. I think if we all get cynical, we're going to go over a cliff. You know, it scares me, that possibility, but there's nothing I can do about it. I'm just one little hobbit, you know, one little hobbit reporter. So I pray about it, and that's it. But in terms of practical steps we can take, what I would say is, let's not give in to cynicism. Let's not conclude that because we've done this to ourselves four times, we're going to do it a fifth time. That's not necessarily so. Why don't we give it a shot? Why don't we give it a shot? Why don't we change the history of investing? Why don't we tell people the realities and let's see how it works? Let's take a sad song and make it better. That's Rob Bennett's prescription for a world in crisis here, March 11th, 2009. If you have any thoughts of your own on how to save a world in crisis on March 11, 2009, I hope you'll drop me a line. Go to the left-hand side of any page at the PassionSaving.com site. Look for the Contact Rob button and shoot me some words of wisdom or some words of criticism. Always welcome. Good luck with your investing strategies in this brave new world of ours. Take care, my friend. Bye-bye.